Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. What's up, Sarah?
Hey, Megan. It feels like it's been a while.
I know,
because
I was with you in person last week, so we didn't record. But it's like it always takes us a little time to get back in the routine.
It does. And it's a very different energy being together in person versus the way we record. We should actually really quickly tell the story about when we had to record a couple segments quickly when we were together in a hotel.
It took way longer than it needed to.
Do you remember what happened? The noise from above?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. So there was like, they were doing something. What were they doing?
Construction. Like they were working on the floors. But the funny thing is we had all morning to do it and we kind of kept putting it off. And then we got buckled down, like sat down, set everything up.
And they literally started tapping on
the banging.
Yes.
The banging begins.
Well, if you like random stories about Sarah and I, you're going to love this because this is one of our More Than Mom episodes where we kind of don't do what we generally do on Tuesdays, which is tackle a parenting topic and give actual advice. We're just talking about fluffy stuff. And today I thought it would be fun for us to just kind of share some random things. I love when we talk about when we were younger, and I love like kind of shaping a show around that.
Yeah.
So this one's pretty heavily focused on, I called it Megan and Sarah Go Back in Time. Although some of it's not, you know, it's not all about that time. But because we could also speak for hours, if we were just let go, I kind of organized it into talking about work and style. So
The
first half and then style during the second half.
I like it. I like the questions you picked. This is always fun for me because I just show up.
You just show up and get to answer some maybe embarrassing things about yourself. I don't know. It looks like you have a couple things in here that are going to be a little embarrassing to talk about.
I mean, the longer we do this show, the more layers that have to get peeled back.
You're right.
Yeah, we eventually will run out of stories. Maybe not. Okay, before we do that, though, I just wanted to quickly mention that we are gearing up to record two bonus audio classes. We call them audio classes. They're like a bonus podcast episode with some extra resources and a little bit more of a class structure. We do those for our Patreon community. So if you're not familiar with what that is, Patreon's a way to support creators that you love with a few bucks a month. You're kind of showing your support as a fan and a listener, and then there's usually some fun perks for you in it. So if you have not checked out our Patreon page, it's at patreon.com/themomhour, and we will link that up in the show notes as well, but I thought to mention it because we're about to drop two bonus audio classes later this month.
And those have been really fun to do. So
yeah.
I like the idea of getting them in more people's hands.
Yeah, love it.
Or ears, as it were.
Ears and hands.
Okay, so I guess I'll ask the questions. I'll let you go first, and then, or maybe sometimes I'll jump in first. But for this first one, I'm going to let you go first. So, Sarah, what did you do for a living before you became a mom?
Very good question.
And I feel like some of these are things I feel like we've talked about and teased, but we've never like really dived in on them. So people might not know.
Yeah, definitely. And we always have people listening at various degrees of obsession. So not everybody has listened to everything. Well, really briefly, in case you don't know, after college, I danced professionally in ballet companies and modern dance companies and one jazz company who thought I was okay enough. I'm really bad at jazz, but, and I also waited tables and taught dance during that time. So I skipped over that part to like when I was a more traditional professional. So right before I had kids, I was a corporate writer and strategic relationships manager for a mid-sized company. I worked directly for the CEO, and I did everything from, ghostwriting articles and creating newsletter content internally for the company. I also developed like internal educational content for seminars and meetings that were internal to the company or internal to our industry partners. So I didn't work on communications that were client facing, but I worked on basically everything else. So it was good. I had a lot of PowerPoint knowledge at that time. I did a lot of writing, like regular writing, like articles. And, but I also like did a little bit of event management and a little bit of relationship management because I worked directly for the CEO. It was a growing company. And so there was always key players in the industry that we wanted to connect with or impress. And I was sometimes involved in the communication surrounding that, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. That sounds like a job I would have liked to have had at some point.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had kids really young. So before I had Jacob, I was a college student, but I was also temping a lot. By the time I would say that I actually got pregnant with him, I was probably taking about a nine credit load semester, I think.
Okay.
And so I was taking mostly evening classes, and then I was filling my days with working in various different temp jobs. And like the one, oh my gosh, there was always so much intrigue in a company. And when you're the temp, like no one notices you mm-hmm. and no one pays any attention to you usually. So I remember I would go in, and often it was literally someone's on maternity leave. So we need someone to sit at this desk
right.
and wait for the phone to ring,
right.
which sometimes it doesn't. This was before a lot of businesses had internet. Mm-hmm. So you would have a computer, but like nothing to do on it.
Right.
Like, it's not like I could surf the web or whatever. So I would have it open. I would like make these elaborate spreadsheets for who knows what. Sometimes I'd always have like a yellow. There's always lots of yellow pads.
Right.
And I would like, I don't even know, like plan out my life or whatever I was going to do. I just remember spending a lot of time writing and playing around with spreadsheets because I had like literally nothing else to do. But there was also drama. Like I remember working in this architect's office, and this would have been, you know, the late 90s, and people still smoked in there. Like all the architects smoked in the office. It was crazy. And I'd be sitting there like, is this legal? I guess it was legal. I don't think, well, if it wasn't legal, nobody had like come in and shut them down
right.
for it. Right. And people right. weren't complaining yet. I worked in another place where like there was some drama between the partners, and then one of the partners died.
Oh, wow.
And I came in the next day, and like his kids came over and told me that he died, but like not to say anything because it was crazy. So that was all, that was like all this intrigue. And I just kind of sat there and watched it.
I bet like, that was like fun in a way. Like for you, you're like such an observer yeah. of human nature. So
well, it was like being Harriet the Spy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to sit and watch, and I had such low stakes. Like nothing yeah. I did mattered. Like, it's not like I was doing a job where, you know, my performance really made a huge difference in most cases. Sometimes there were roles where, when I was pregnant with Jacob, I ended up working for a huge, health insurance company and like a really well-known one. And they had just like completely discontinued one of the plans they had or something. And, mm-hmm. or like the company got acquired. And so they had absorbed this other company. That's what it was. And I was like the first stop, like I was the 800 mm-hmm. healthcare or whatever. But if anybody called in about that other thing, I was supposed to just dump them into this voicemail that no one was checking.
Oh,
so like I would have people call back and say, I called yesterday about my claim and you know, sent me to this voicemail, but no one's called me back. And then I had no choice but to say, okay, well, let me try again. And then I would send them to the same voicemail. It was awful.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So like ones like that were stressful, but there were plenty of that were just an easy way to sit around and collect, you know, at the time, probably
right.
$8 an hour.
Right.
So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
So that was actually kind of fun. I enjoyed being a temp.
Nice.
Okay. So what is the worst job you ever had?
Well, okay. So I worked in a lot of restaurants, and I had a lot of like worst day on the jobs. I have a lot right. of like restaurant kind of nightmare bosses or like terrible thing, but I actually liked those jobs and I really liked waiting tables. So I had to think of something else. The thing that came to mind was a very early babysitting gig I had where I was probably 12 or 13, and I had to go I think of this on so many levels now as a mom, but I had to go to my dad's office, and there was a woman there who either was on maternity leave or was just transitioning back from maternity leave. So she was in meeting, she was back at the office, but she had a very small infant. And probably because of breastfeeding or whatever, she wanted to have her infant there. Maybe not every day, but there was some kind of an arrangement where this woman was bringing her baby to the office, a kind of a corporate environment. And I would go and like just the baby slept a lot. So I was just like, mm-hmm. I wasn't really babysitting. I was just kind of there to like keep the baby happy. And the mom was kind of down the hall in a meeting, and the baby cried. Like everyone assured me, like, you don't need to know how to work with babies. I was so young. I was 12 or 13. They were like, well, it doesn't matter because the mom's right down the hall. She'll come if anything, you know, if you get out of your league. And
right.
I just remember the baby cried inconsolably. And I felt so embarrassed because I was not by myself. It wasn't like I was at their house where I could
right.
figure it out for myself. There was
You're
all
like
these
under
people,
pressure with people watching,
including other moms and other parents who probably thought, oh my gosh, this kid is not equipped to deal with a crying baby. I'm sure I barely knew how to hold a baby.
Right.
So that is just, it wasn't a real job, but it is one where I look back and I'm like, oh, I was so ill-equipped, and I felt so like in a you know, like a fishbowl, like a literal fishbowl, because I think I was in an office area with glass doors where people were looking in. I mean, like, what is happening?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, that sounds like what people watching you try to like sweat through something hard is the worst.
Especially when you're 13.
Yeah.
Like, I was never a very good babysitter. I
wasn't really either, because I didn't ever bond to the kids I babysat.
Yeah, me neither.
So it's not pleasant. Like when I was like 11, I started getting babysitting gigs for the kids that my mom took care of during the day. It's like she had a daycare in the house. And those were actually, first of all, I was at the perfect age because I actually loved hanging out with the kids. And and also I already had relationships with these kids.
Yeah.
So those jobs were actually pretty good. But when I got older and I was just randomly showing up at people's houses to watch their kids, like I wasn't great at it. I didn't really care about their kids.
I wasn't someone who was nostalgic for childhood play. Like I always kind of wanted to be older than I was. So when I was 14 or 15, I wasn't missing the days of Play-Doh and Barbies. Yeah. I was like wanting to be 18 and in college. So I just didn't have any, I wasn't good at playing with kids. I mean, I kept them alive, but.
You did keep them alive. And you know what? That counts. That
barely kept this infant alive though. I mean, it was not happy that I was in charge.
Okay.
How about you?
Poor Sarah. Okay. So when I was in, and I had a lot of grunt jobs, like everybody does, right? Or most teenagers do. But the one that really stands out, this may have been my only no call, no show where I just never went back. That I can remember anyway. It was at a Steak and Shake. I worked there the first semester of my second year of college. John and I were dating and we both worked at Steak and Shake. And they loved him.
Okay.
And they were super mean to me.
Oh,
and I think
sad.
It was all women, like everybody who made the schedule and all the other wait staff were all women. And they fawned over John. They gave him all the best tables. And he was good. Like, he would get huge tips. But something about, like, dude servers, I think people just interact with him differently. I don't know what it is. But, like, he killed it. And I was really intent on doing it right. Like, making sure the food got out when it was when it needed to, blah, blah, blah. So I was a hustler. And I would run around and make sure everything got done correctly. But I don't think I was particularly friendly. I think I was just, like, wanting to get it done.
Yeah.
My sister was, a career waitress for, I want to say like 15 or 20 years. And she had a place where she worked where everyone knew her and would ask for her by name. I was never that kind of server. Like, I don't like small talk. I don't particularly like niceties. I'm a friendly person, but in that role, it was just a little different. Anyway, so it got to the point where like I was being sabotaged by the other servers. And then they even told John not to help me. Like,
sad.
And they would give me like these really awful tables and they would know, like they'd give me the table full of like drunk guys that just got out of the bar, or like, you know, a bunch of teenagers, or like the church ladies who'd never tipped. Like they knew they had these tables and they would give them to me and then they would like punish me. What did I ever do to them? One day I actually got super, super sick and they made me come in. And I was like, you don't want me there. Like, I think I have the flu. And they made me come in and they were so mean that I left and
I
never went back.
So terrible. That's like workplace harassment.
It is.
What's the statute of limitations on this?
I should go back and start something with these people. But no, anyway. So I'm sorry. I like their fries and their burgers, but I would never work at a Steak and Shake again.
Well, that's so, that.
That's that. It's done. If they were hoping to get me back, it's not going to happen now. Okay. So next question.
Okay.
Have you ever done anything weird or embarrassing for money?
Okay. So I had to take a twist on this because I couldn't think of anything that specifically answers to this question, but I do have a funny story. Growing up in Santa Barbara, there's a very famous, well-known at the time, at least, photography school, private, I don't know, it's a graduate program or what, but it would draw photographers from all over the country and they would always need models for various photo, you know, not the traditional, not like a catwalk model, but just, you know, for their photography. And because I was a dancer and my dance studio was right in the same area, it wasn't uncommon to somehow have a collaboration like, oh, we're doing this photography project. We need some ballerinas or we need people who can move because they love doing that kind of stuff, right? So a few different times I would do these projects and sometimes you'd get paid and I was a teenager and sometimes you would just get the prints, which as a dancer, an aspiring dancer, that was really cool to have a really cool artistic shot of yourself dancing and sometimes like in a crazy costume or at the beach or so anyway, it was a cool opportunity. As a mom now, I think, oh my gosh, like my 15-year-old daughter's going to go get photographed by someone I don't know. Right. And I think, I do think my mom was probably like a little cautious about it. And I remember her coming with me sometimes, and it was never totally sketchy, but I can see how on the outside it would seem to be. But there was this one person who had me do a whole bunch of dance modeling. Like I was like in this crazy costume down at the beach, and then we were in a studio, and one was like early in the morning, and it was a couple, two or three different sessions, and it was never going to be for money, but it was going to be for these amazing prints, right? Like these amazing copies of these photographs. And I was maybe getting older, like thinking about college and thinking about all the ways I could use these cool photographs of myself dancing. And this guy dropped off the face of the planet, stopped returning calls. We never, I remember my mom being so mad because I did a lot of work, and it was like just one of those things where it was this handshake deal. And it wasn't even money, but it was like kind of putting yourself
to get something
out there. Yeah. And like, you know, I was borrowing costumes from the studio. I was hustling to like help this person with their creative project. So wherever that person is, they've got really cool photos of me that I never
saw. Of you.
So that didn't even really answer your question, but I thought it was kind of a funny story.
Maybe somehow they'll make their way back to you now. Like, maybe like
I'll see them, like,
knows this guy will hear this and then put the guilt on him. Or they'll be like, I knew I recognized the girl who's in this picture.
Right.
And then send it to you. I don't know.
But the Brooks Institute is the photography whatever school. And there were all kinds of cool, like when we were really little, you could get really good family photographs and cool artsy photographs of your kids and stuff, because there were these students who needed portfolio work. So it was a cool thing to have nearby. But anyway, how about you?
Okay. So, you know, we've been listening to this podcast, The Dream.
We have.
You and I both.
I'm done.
Oh, are you? So I think I'm like in episode 6 or 7, but it's about multi-level marketing companies. And it's just had me thinking about the fact that I am at least four time, possibly five time, if I really thought about it, multi-level marketing failure. So
I don't think I knew that this to this degree. This could probably be a whole episode, but
it probably could be. My first stint, I was 17, and I went with my stepmom to a Mary Kay like sales meeting, like a pep rally, basically. They tried to get you all riled up. And one of the national sales directors, and people treated her like she was a god. Like, I mean, it was kind of crazy, was there and speaking, and she was very inspiring. And I've always had this entrepreneurial spirit, and I like makeup. And I was just like, this is it. I could do this. And then I could, like, I was just about to go to college. And I was thinking, like, this would be a great way to have some extra money, blah, blah, blah. I'll know so many people at school. I'll just be able to sell to everybody, yada, yada. So this is, and Mary Kay went through a pretty big rebrand or brand refresh, I would say, like, after this time.
Okay.
But this was still what it was kind of old. Like, it was your mom's makeup.
Yeah.
The women wore a lot of heavy blue eyeshadow. Yeah. And, like, it just, like, the packaging kind of felt, like, a little mature and stuff. But I liked the product. And what I didn't think, and, oh, because I wasn't actually old enough to sign into, legally, like, sign a binding contract, they had to kind of, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge it. Like, I remember the director that I came with that brought me and my stepmom brought me over to this national sales director and had her, like, she literally winked. And, like, her eyelashes were so covered in mascara that, like, the wink kind of briefly stuck.
Like, stuck together.
Like, yeah. It was like Lucille Bluth when she winks.
Yes.
It was kind of like that.
Yes.
On Arrested Development. But so she was like, oh, that's okay. So she signed me in. My stepmom put up the cash. And then I failed because, first of all, what I didn't think about when I was all, you know, excited and, like, getting all in a lather, I didn't think about the fact that none of my friends had any money. Like, nobody had money to spend on real skincare products. And it wasn't super expensive. I do remember that the basic skincare set, which you weren't supposed to break up, like, you weren't supposed to sell the pieces individually. You were really supposed to sell it all at once as one, I think at the time was $56. I don't remember why that sticks in my head, but it does. And all of my friends were, like, using $3 Clean and Clear or, like, Noxzema.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't using real product yet. So, and nobody, none of my friends wore makeup.
Right.
Really. Like, mascara, I guess.
And it was maybe in, like, the part of the 90s where, like, natural grunge, like.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Less,
like,
overly made up.
Yeah. I guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that went nowhere. Well, later, when I had Jacob and maybe even Jake, maybe both, maybe Jacob and Isaac, I signed up again because some new person got me all excited. And I was like, well, now it's totally different. Like, now I'm staying home with my kids. And like, I know moms and I know people who actually wear makeup. It was a failure again, because what I remembered the second time is I don't like selling. Like, I don't like that kind of selling. Mm-hmm. I don't like some of the suggestions were like, you know, talk up somebody on the bus and tell them that you like their lipstick and then give them a sample and then call them up. And I just knew I was never going to do any of that stuff.
Right.
So that was a fail. Then I sold, and I'm putting sold in the biggest air quotes ever, Creative Memories, which is a scrapbooking.
Uh-huh.
The reason I did that was because my stepmom was super into it. She was like a heavy duty scrapbooker.
Okay.
And honestly, it was just cheaper to get the stuff at cost if right. you signed up. And I got a lot of stuff. I don't regret that one because I never really thought I would sell it.
Yeah.
I bought it because I wanted to get a bunch of the stuff that was in the starter kit.
Yeah.
I made two or three scrapbooks. It was fine. But I did at the end, I had so much, like we still have, the starter kit came with a bunch of scissors mm-hmm. and I still have the scissors all over the place.
That's
like
awesome.
You were supposed to bring them to the parties or the workshops right. or whatever. And then the last one I did was Body Shop at Home.
Mm.
And that one, actually, I made a little money and then I got out. So that one was, this was probably the this was probably like 2004, huh. I'm going to say.
I haven't heard of this one.
William was a baby. I don't think it ever really took off, but I love Body Shop products. Mm-hmm. The mall that I lived near did not have Body Shop. I remember that. And that's kind of like how it got on my radar. And I wanted some specific thing that they had. And you could order, but they also made it really easy to order online.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I had like two like internet parties where I invited friends, people put their order in. I ordered stuff. I got a bunch of products.
Right.
I probably made $50. And right. then I was like, and scene.
Well, it sounds I'm like done. You got more like finely tuned into what would like why you were doing it and what right. would make it not successful, but what would make it like
worth it, to
worth
me.
It yeah. for you. Which yeah, is,
that's true.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, by the time I did like Creative Memories and Body Shop, I was no longer starry eyed.
Right.
And thinking, oh my gosh, this is the answer to all my family's problems.
Right.
And I think that individual companies also sell the opportunity differently mm-hmm. and have mm-hmm. a different culture about the way they sell the opportunity. And like, I don't remember feeling pressured with those two. And
right.
I do remember thinking like with Mary Kay, like, this is it.
Right, right.
This is it.
This
I'm going to do
it.
I'm going to be rich. I'm going to have a pink Cadillac. I never got close to having
I see one
Cadillac.
Around my town once in a while.
There's a couple here.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So, and at that time, the entry-level car was like a Grand Am. And I remember thinking like, ooh, I could zip around town in my Grand Am. Didn't get close to that either. I lost money on that deal.
We will link up that podcast if anyone's interested. It's like yes. a whole rabbit hole you can go down.
It is definitely a rabbit hole. All right. So, okay. What did you think you wanted to do for a living when you were like in high school? And does it in any way resemble what you do now?
Yeah. Well, the answer to this question is, what did I write on those MASH fortune telling games that you would
right?
play with your friends of like your future career? And there was always three or four ones that you wanted to be. And then you always had to include one that you didn't, right? Like garbage
right.
collector or something. Right. So mine were always dancer, teacher, writer, mom. I guess I meant like stay at home mom. I'm not sure yeah. what my conception was of that. I mean, you can be a writer. I mean, you can be a mom and all those other things, but
right.
I pretty much have done all of those things. The only thing I haven't done in a formal capacity is the teacher part in the traditional sense. But I taught dance and I quote unquote teach through this podcast, through my yeah. work in the school library. Like I come from a long line of teachers. So I do feel like there's this like teacher in me that's never been in a classroom, and probably it's good that way. Like I, mm-hmm. But I feel like, yeah, they've all related to what I've done in some way. How about you?
So similar. Like I wanted to be an actress or performer. And mm-hmm. I actually wanted to be a teacher pretty badly in elementary and middle school, and had gotten over that by the time I was in mm-hmm. high school. I considered being like an English professor.
Yeah, I think I thought of that at some point too. By the time I was actually in college, I did not
yeah.
want to be.
I know
an
that
English
I toyed
professor.
With the idea of becoming some kind of college instructor, even if it was just, you know, part-time at a community college. But I think it just, my path never took me there and I was kind of over it
yeah.
by that point. But writer, actress / performer, and interesting about mom, because I remember always knowing I wanted to have kids, like always, like never having any doubt about that. But I never thought, like it never occurred to me to think how being a mom would fit with the rest of it.
Right.
Well, like never even thought about it.
Yeah. And it's kind of silly that I wrote it as a career option, as if it's like in a box that's mutually exclusive to those right. other things. But that just represents like my pretty immature understanding True. Of how things work. And yeah. I mean, I was in a community with a mix of working and stay at home moms, but I think I saw stay at home mom as, you know,
a job
and a path that right. people intentionally chose, I guess. Like
yeah.
some did and some didn't choose that, but it was an option. So I guess that's why it was on there.
Yeah. So I haven't really gotten paid to act, except I did make $50 once to do an improv murder mystery thing. That was pretty terrible.
Yeah, but you've made it a major part of
your life. But it's a major part of my life.
Yeah.
I have been paid to direct. Like, so yes, that yeah. is definitely part of my life. And writing is a part of my life. And I guess you could call this some kind of performance in a weird way.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. We did all the things we thought we were going to do, Sarah.
Well, I guess we set the bar kind of low, maybe. Like, we didn't put astronaut and, like, congresswoman, yeah.
no.
president.
See, that's why I didn't do any of those things.
Very,
now I'd be disappointed.
Very modest ambitions between exactly. the two of us.
We did it. We did it anyway.
Should we take a quick break?
We should. Okay, so we're going to talk about some sponsors right now.
We are.
I actually cannot believe that we're already talking about swimsuits.
I know.
But I'm actually headed to Florida this week. And you guys have heard me talk about how stressful it can be to find a suit you love, and it makes you feel really good about yourself. And this is something that I've definitely struggled with over the last few years. Like, we've all got different bodies, and when you're a mom, your body changes. Mine has changed a ton. And there's just something about finding a swimsuit that you love that makes you feel confident that it's a game changer. And all moms deserve to feel good while they're like lounging on the beach or like running after their kids or like yelling at their kids to quit throwing sand or whatever right. it is that they do on right? the beach.
And you also kind of need a different suit for each of those activities.
Exactly.
I feel.
Exactly.
It depends. So we are really excited to welcome a new sponsor to help out with the swimsuit struggle, and that is miraclesuit.com. If you guys aren't familiar, it's a one-stop shop for beautiful, stylish swimwear that really represents all lifestyles and body types. I happen to have a really long torso and not much of a bust. So my whole life, I have really struggled to find one-piece suits that look right on me. At the same time, a two-piece is not necessarily what I want for every occasion, like we were just talking about. So when miraclesuit.com sent us suits to try, I was quite honestly shocked that the one-pieces worked for my body. And then I found out that long torsos are one of the specific body types that they make sure to represent. I was like, I feel so known. I feel so loved.
They love you. Yeah, I loved the moss green suit that I picked out and had this really cool crochet detailing on the back. Felt very young. Their fit guide made it simple to find the right suit for my body, and they have a wide selection of different suits on the site. They also offer free shipping and returns on all orders in the US, which is really nice because, you know, you're kind of basically trying it on at home.
Yeah. Yeah. You're shopping online, which is that adds that extra layer of challenge. So we have a really good offer for you guys. Are you ready for this? It's 20% off any swimsuit from miraclesuit.com. 20%. So this won't last forever. You're going to head to miraclesuit.com/themomhour. Again, to save 20% off any suit from miraclesuit.com, go to miraclesuit.com/themomhour.
Yay. Well, yeah. Setting us up perfectly for our second half when we're going to be talking about style.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about suits. And now we're also welcoming back ModCloth as a sponsor today. Sarah, you know, like, I'm ready to start thinking about the spring, right? Because after that polar vortex, winter is dead to me.
Yeah, that's enough. You've had enough winter.
Yeah, I've had enough.
Well, yeah. And you and I are heading to a couple conferences this spring. And for me, that is always a time when I want to up my fashion game a little bit. Like, something about hanging out with all those stylish bloggers.
So we're getting younger and younger,
yeah,
by the way.
How is that happening, right? So ModCloth styles are really fun and fashion forward without looking too young for those of us in the 40-ish range. They have a lot of cute stuff for spring. And I am looking at this dress. It's called the Everlasting Impression Maxi Wrap Dress. You need to look at it and tell me, Megan, but I feel like this could push me out of my comfort zone a little. I don't know if you think I can pull it off.
So you're not going to believe this, but I have been eyeballing that exact dress and I am like obsessed with it to the point now that it keeps showing up like on my Facebook and everywhere I go, I keep seeing it again and again. So yeah, get it. But then we might match at a conference.
Okay. That would make an impression at a conference. Oh my gosh.
We wouldn't wear it on the same day. But we both could get the same dresses because even though we wear different sizes, ModCloth carries a wide variety of sizes from 00. I didn't even know that was a thing, to 28. And they have a team of stylists on hand to help you with fit questions. They also, this is one of the things I love the most about ModCloth. They show the clothes on models of all different shapes and sizes, which is so helpful when shopping online.
Yeah, it is my favorite thing too, because yeah, it doesn't make sense on someone whose body doesn't look like yours. So you got to be able to see it. So you guys have to go to ModCloth.com and check out this dress and tell us which one of us you think should get it, or both. We'll link it up in the show notes and you can check it out. I love it. While you're there, we're going to save you 15% on your order of $100 or more when you use the code THEMOMHOUR at checkout. This offer is valid for a one-time use only, and it expires on May 5th of this year. Again, it's modcloth.com, and use the code THEMOMHOUR to save 15% on your order of $100 or more.
All right, let's get back to it. We're going to talk about fashion now.
Yes.
Now that we set everybody up. Okay, Sarah, question for you. Did you have a particular style of dress that you aspired to in your teens or early 20s?
Yes. I feel like there were several. I was very big into fashion aspiration. I still am. I have there's like a difference between the clothes that I wear and the clothes that I look at and kind of fantasize about. So I don't know, maybe okay. When I'm like 65, I will just wear crazy outlandish clothes. But I feel like, yeah, I always have. I had this journal where I would cut out outfits that I loved. And it was usually at this time, like perfectly vintage Levi 501 jeans or cutoffs from like kind of the grunge thrift store era, but somehow that also fit really cute and didn't look sloppy. So that was one right. thing I remember just, you know, idolizing, never could find in my local thrift store. And then with like tank top and a flannel or something, that was just kind of the look. But I also remember I was very heavily influenced by dancer culture because I was a dancer. So I remember like thinking about the outfits I would wear to the studio and looking at, you know, magazine pictures of ballerinas. So that was like a whole subset of my, you know, my aspirational style that was like in the ballet world. And it was like usually this look of like a million leg warmers and layers and like warm up pants and like a sweatshirt with the neck cut out. And yet somehow still looking like you weighed 105 pounds, even with all of those things on.
Layers on, yeah.
You know, like kind of messy hair, but you know, it's like a perfect bun. So I spent a lot of time thinking about that kind of stuff. And then I also have always loved vintage. And for a while, I like really liked kind of like post-World War II. We're going to talk about this later, but like 1940s vintage yeah. style too, like swinger style a little bit. But.
Yeah. Well, I also love like dancer style. Like that's definitely something I would look at and think, gosh, I wish I could pull that off. I will say now that I've been doing all this crazy amount of yoga lately,
I was gonna say, you are. Living it. Like yeah, you look, it is like a ballerina look.
Yeah. I've like always, I'm pretty much in leggings all the time. I brought jeans to California and never put them on.
Yeah.
So I've been living in leggings and like oversized sweaters.
Yeah.
And yeah, and like hair up and stuff. So, and I do like that look. I think it works for me. I also tried the vintage thing for a while and I just felt like an imposter. Like yeah. I love it, but I think you have to have a really specific like overall look to yep. pull that off and like be bold about it and really own it. And I've always felt like a kid playing dress up whenever I've tried to do that.
And you have to be a little bit consistent. I think it's one of those things where you have to decide this is my style. Whereas I always kind of felt like it was like a fun dress up thing. And then the next day I just wanted to wear jeans and a t-shirt.
Like, you have to have the lipstick and the hair and the dress and the right hose and the shoes and all that stuff. So when I was a teen or a tween though, I really wanted to be that girl like in the Delia's catalog, which at that time it was sort of hippie.
Mm-hmm.
It was starting like this was like the, you know, mid 90s and it was starting to have that very hippie feeling. But I went to this small high school in a small town, kind of like in the middle of the country and very conservative and nobody dressed that way. And I just didn't have the guts or the budget or the fashion sense to really pull it off. I lived in like, you know, jeans that were like post 80s, but not really embracing like the late 90s. Like we weren't tight rolling them anymore.
Right.
But they also weren't like the bootlegs yet. So it was kind of that like kind of ugly in between.
Yeah.
And I've like had tucked in rugby shirts that were always oversized. Like anything that at that time that looked like it came out of your dad's closet at my school was in. And half of my clothes actually did come out of my dad's closet. I remember in particular a sweater of his that I was always borrowing. Until I think I just kept it. And then I got into college and then I feel like we started taking like some more risks. Like Jenna and I would, you know, we had the chunky shoes and the bootleg jeans and that wide whale corduroy.
Oh, like, yes.
Was that? Yes. You remember
that? We discussed on this, I think maybe a million years ago, but I remember a specific discussion about the wide whale. I had a jacket.
I had a shirt with, I want to say it had leather patches on the elbows and it was like forest green.
Oh yeah.
And it looked like your boyfriend gave it to you.
Yeah.
I think everything was supposed to look like your boyfriend gave it to you or something. Here's another funny thing. I was in Target a couple weeks ago and I saw the exact coats that Jenna and I bought our freshman year of college. We got them at Wilson's Leather and I remember we spent a lot of money on them. In fact, we put them on layaway.
Nice.
Because we didn't have the money. But hers was a short, like dark brown suede coat with the toggle buttons.
Yep. I totally remember the toggle buttons.
And the Sherpa
yep.
interior.
Yep.
And mine was like basically the same, except it was long and camel colored.
Okay.
I saw those two coats. Like identical.
Somebody's just going through the old like catalogs and stuff
yes.
and just recreating.
I totally agree. So anyway, I love thinking about that because I feel like I think it's an unusual young woman or teenager who really knows who she is fashion wise yeah. at that age. And we all play or we all dress one way, but wish we were dressing yeah. another way. Or like we think we're pulling it off, but then we look at pictures later. We're yeah. like, oh, honey, yeah. but we're all in it together. Like no one's, really
yeah. And you're both influenced by what's around you, but also like you said, looking outward at like, what's going to make me unique? Like what's my
yes.
style. Yeah.
I also remember I know that it was like the first month or two that I was at college because I remember like the weather, it was fall. I remember where I was on campus and I remember looking over and seeing this girl. She must've been an upperclassman. I don't know, but she had a perfectly buttoned pastel cardigan. And this was the time when like
oh.
people were wearing those tight cardigans over like, you'd wear them over like a collared
yep.
shirt.
Yep. 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 I remember and they started sewing them together and just selling yes. them as one. Do you
yes, I do. And like, because no one could get it right.
Right.
Because
I still can't
be
pull
a
that
skew.
Off. Like button up shirt is too, there's too much
it's
material.
It's too much material and it's usually not fitted enough. And then the sweater was so fitted that it never looked right. And I remember you would always have the, bottom untucked and sticking out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But she only buttoned like, I want to say the third, fourth and fifth buttons. So she had the top of the cardigan was open and
okay.
the bottom of the cardigan was open. And
yep.
I tried to make that work and could not.
Yeah.
Like a lot, like I fantasized about looking like that girl in a pink cardigan. Just couldn't do it. Just couldn't do it.
I love it.
All right. We should move on to something else that'll make us feel bad about ourselves. No, okay. This one will probably make us feel good. So, Sarah, describe your prom dress or dresses.
Okay. I went to prom twice with the same person. So it was his senior prom when I was a junior. And then he came to my prom when I was a senior. I loved my first prom dress more in that moment than I loved my wedding dress at my
wow.
wedding. Now, I didn't love the person more, obviously.
Right.
And I loved my wedding dress, but that is how much at the time I loved this dress. I got it in LA on 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica, which by itself felt so grown up because we went down with my friend's older sister who went to UCLA and in a little boutique. And it was a dress off the rack that Elizabeth Shue had worn to the Oscars like a year or two, or maybe the Golden Globes or something like a year or two earlier. I put a picture in our show notes.
I
for
see
you,
it.
Megan.
And I swear I remember that dress.
She was.
It must have made a big splash.
I think it did. And this is again at the height of our like magazine reading days
yes.
where you could remember. I could probably tell you what other people wore to the Oscars those years. Like I just paid so much attention. It's really simple. It actually looks like a wedding dress. It's still beautiful to me right now. I'll put a link in the show notes. You guys can see it. It almost looks like a simple sheath wedding
dress.
It's very
timeless.
Mm-hmm.
But the wide straps.
Yes. And they twist.
Uh-huh.
So they
yeah.
almost go into like a mini cap sleeve almost.
Mm-hmm.
There's like some cleavage going on. It just felt like the most grown up dress ever. And
I
love
it. Picture of yourself in it.
Yeah. I will dig up. I would have prom pictures. And then I wore it again, like 2 years later to a winter formal in college. And you know, I'm not going to say I gained the freshman 15, but I was not the same size when I was a junior in high school that I was a freshman
right.
in college in the middle
Most
of winter, in the middle of winter in Chicago.
Right.
So it was very snug. And I just remember almost being disappointed. Like the experience of wearing it again was not the same as wearing it the first time. The next year for prom, I borrowed this short, simple red dress, almost like a 20s flapper dress without the fringe, but it kind of okay. hung straight like that. And I did the 1940s thing with black seamed stockings and these really fun shoes. And I remember thinking I was really clever because I borrowed the dress. And so then I spent any money that I would have spent on a dress. I kind of went all out on the stockings and the shoes and the jewelry. And I had fun doing my hair. And it was, again, kind of that like dress up feel. So it wasn't
yeah.
a spectacular dress, but I still had fun creating the outfit. How about you?
Well, okay. So I went to prom twice in 1992. I went the senior. I was a sophomore. I could not believe my dad let me go. And then,
I know. I was like, yeah.
I know, right? And then I didn't. I skipped my junior year, and then I went my senior year. So 1992 and 1994, My sister came of age and was a teenager in the 80s. And so I looked to her and her friends as like the pinnacles of fashion.
Right.
And she had a beautiful prom dress. It was like this black, big skirt, but it had this like white with black stripes, like the cuffs, like it almost had like a, it wasn't long sleeved. It's really hard to describe. I'll see if I can dig up a picture. It was gorgeous. And I always thought, like, I would pore over magazines and look at those 80s style dresses with the big floofy skirts and everything and think, that is what I want. And then I got to the 90s and I found 90s formal wear very disappointing.
Yeah.
It just was like, it was either like kind of that pageant style where it's like the top is super beaded and tight fitting and then the skirt. I just wasn't into those. And then there was tons of sequins, really bright, weird colors. I mean, there was also bright, weird colors in the 80s, but I just, and like some of them were that, I guess taffeta, where they're like kind of iridescent.
Yep.
And
I didn't
love that either. So I did end up with, oh, and the other thing is we lived in this small town. So everybody went to like one of three bridal shops to get their prom dresses. Unless you had tons of money in your parents.
You weren't on Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica.
No, I wasn't. No. And like sometimes, you know, some parents would take their kids into like Chicago and shop, but that was like, that would have been considered kind of showy in our school.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that would have flown really. Everybody kind of spent around the same amount. It was just kind of that was the culture. So anyway, I went short cause I wasn't a huge fan of the long styles then. So I had like, I really actually did like my dress a lot my sophomore year. It was blue. It was that iridescent, but it wasn't too over the, it wasn't like that crunchy fabric. Mm-hmm. It was,
I know exactly what you mean.
Feeling. And then it was, it had like this kind of fun sequin beaded top with like, what do they call it? The sweetheart neck, you know, like what goes down a little bit on the bodice. And then I really liked that one and actually would have worn that again my senior year, but I didn't fit into it anymore. I had grown.
Mm-hmm.
And then my senior year, it was an emerald green short dress with a halter neck and it was all sequins. Like literally, I looked like a disco ball. I went today and like looked at like, you know, prom dress 1994 and found a bunch of pictures of like magazine ads and stuff. I remember them. Like I remember many of them because I spent so much time looking at, you know, 17 magazine and Sassy and all those.
Oh, I forgot about Sassy.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, the sequin dress really made me look like I had curves that I didn't actually have, which I really liked. So I liked the way I looked in that dress, but I just was disappointed in 90s formal wear.
Yeah. And so, as you're talking, I'm realizing that the slight age and schooling difference is big here because I could tell you all about formal options from like 95 through 98. But I have a hard time even picture. I don't think I was even reading the magazines quite yet in 92. I was in sixth grade, 12.
It would have been different. It would have been sort of like me looking to 1988 as some kind of like way to, you know, pick out. And the those things change fast.
Yep.
Especially back then. I feel like that between the 80s and 90s, the style changed like a crazy amount. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, Sam, now that we're talking about going back in time, Sarah, if you could go back to any period of time just for the clothes, what would it be?
Well, let's have you answer this one first, just for kicks, because I know we both have similar things to say, and I feel like I keep going first. So you go first.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in theory, like I love the look of the 50s and the 40s. I really think that the swing dresses and the wide skirts are so pretty and flattering. But like, I think that I would just be an epic failure on things like hats, hose, gloves. Like I wouldn't know, first of all, the etiquette, and like I wouldn't want to follow it. So I think I'd rather go to a time when women were being a little more daring on purpose.
Yeah.
Like the 20s or the 60s. And also, you know, we both just saw Mary Poppins Returns, which was set in the early 30s. And I would watch another movie just to see Jane's wardrobe, like just about her clothes.
I mean, all of everything in that movie artistically, the houses, the clothes, like, but yeah, her and her haircut and her clothing.
It was like all those wide legged pants and like that kind of like, men's business wear, but super feminine.
Yeah.
It was just adorable.
Yes, it was adorable. And I love
that
actress.
Every time she came on the stage, I gasped. Like, oh.
I love that actress so much. It's Emily Mortimer. If you guys haven't seen it, she's fantastic. I loved her in The Newsroom. Okay. So I have to answer this question now. I love like most vintage looks. So I had to think about like what one would I really want to go back to. And I think back to my love of like post-war 40s, maybe into the early 50s, but before like the humongous skirts. Like when did that happen? Like early 50s?
I guess I thought it was happening all along, but like people were dressing differently based on what they were Because not everybody wore the big dresses in the 50s either.
Right. That's true.
So like some people wore the pencil skirts and like yeah. So, and I like that look a lot too.
I do too. I do too.
I don't know when it happened, but.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm going to go with mid 40s through early 50s. Call the Midwife, A League of Their Own, red lipstick, seamed stockings, like all of the fussiness about the matching hats and handbags and pocketbooks. Like I would do it all. I mean, we're just fantasizing here.
That's true. I don't have to I'm not actually committing myself to wearing old school pantyhose.
Right. But I also can really get drawn in by late 60s, early 70s, just long, long hair. I don't know. I can kind of get sucked into any of it. I love it all.
I think that last season of Mad Men, would that have been 69 or 70? When was that?
Yeah.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. I loved Peggy and Joan, their wardrobe is amazing. So, I mean, I guess if you have someone dressing you, any decade's going to look amazing, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I'm thinking The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which starts maybe mid 50s and right now we're right around 1960. Does that sound right?
That sounds right.
Mid to late 50s. And obviously when we're watching these shows, everything's been perfectly curated. Like the actual cost to have those wardrobes. Are you caught up in Maisel? Have you watched all of it?
I'm probably four episodes into the
this is
season.
Not a spoiler, but I mean, you might've seen it. The scene where they're getting ready to go away for the summer and they have all of their clothes out. It's it's so satisfying because it's just everything matches and her dad's getting
go back
so
and just
mad.
Watch that.
Yes, me too. Her dad's so mad that they have to bring all these clothes and it's so gross and extravagant. It would never really happen anymore. And even it only happened at the very elite at that time. But there's something just so excessive about we have to have this outfit and you have to have this that matches this outfit. So of course we need an entire car for our clothes.
Right. Exactly. Oh, that's so funny.
Loved it.
All right. Well, last question. We do go on, but I love talking about all this stuff.
Me too.
Now we're going back in time. We're forced to go back into a period of time, but it's one that you've already lived through.
Okay.
What would it be? Do you want me to go first or do you want to go
first?
No,
I can go first. Is this fashion related or just...
Fashion. Yes. Sorry. Fashion related.
Okay. Then you have to go first because I think I answered it wrong.
Okay. That's not a problem. Well, for me, it would be the 80s because I was a kid and so my mom dressed me in the 80s. It really wasn't until the very end of the 80s. I would have turned 13. Well, no, I would have been 12 in 1989. So I was starting to kind of be interested in clothes and starting to at least have an opinion about stuff.
Right.
But that was also the tail end of it. Right. So I would love to go back as a young woman in 84, 85, 86 and figure out who I want to be. And I think I could dress a whole bunch of different ways. I could have seen myself with the super short hair and that punk look. I could have seen myself with the over the top, big crunchy hair. I didn't even learn by the time I learned how to do my hair, right. The 80s was over.
Yeah.
I would love to go back and be able to just bodaciously do all of it.
Okay. This one's really hard because I feel the last 20 years aren't cute enough yet. You know, they just don't look.
Everything else is so forgettable to me.
I would want to do that again. My kids are watching a lot of movies right now that are from the early to mid 90s. And the moms, the way the moms dress in these low budget movies about puppies or whatever. So bad. Home Alone era, but Home Alone was a really good movie with a real budget. So all of the bad movies that came out around that time, for some reason, my kids are watching a lot of these. They mostly involve animals. It's mostly
because there was a rash of them. A rash of
Beethoven. And even the first Beethoven's even good, but it's all of the B-list ones that didn't make it to our memories. And I always look at the moms in those and I'm oh God.
Well, that was kind of that was the era that I was in ending high school and going to college. And it was what I remember about that time is that it could go wrong very quickly. The mom jeans that now the girls are somehow pulling off and making them look cute did not look cute.
No, they did
when
not.
When they actually were being worn.
They did
and
not.
And they were always paired with some kind of puffy sweatshirt or something that was super unflattering. And regular hair was unflattered. Everything just looked bleh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. So I had an answer written down that was totally not about fashion. So I'm kind of going off the cuff, but I'm going to go with early to mid 90s when I was an awkward 12-year-old looking at the 25-year-olds in the magazines or in movies. Like I'm thinking the Winona Ryder era.
Yeah.
Like a little bit of, there was like a kind of an intellectual bookishness about some of those characters that I love. Short, like short, cute hair and glasses.
Yep.
I don't know. I feel like that could be kind of fun, but I also feel like I'd have to think about that one more.
Yeah. And I mean, technically I also did live toward the end or through the end of the '70s, which I think could be fascinating to like some of the movies I've seen. But again, yeah. It's like, when you watch a movie about an era, you're not really getting what people really looked like. You're getting the fashion, you're getting the stylist and the style, the styled version of that.
Well, that's why like old family photos, we've talked about like how fun it is to just look at the everyday things of back to when we did our time capsule episode, like the everyday details of old family photos are so fascinating. I think you and I both love that because it isn't the styled version. It is the actual,
it's the like actual
the books people actually had on their coffee table and the coffee mugs they were actually drinking out of. And Ooh, that made me think of The Americans, which is another show that has great period dressing. Have you watched that show?
I have not.
So it takes place in the early 80s, like I think late 70s and early 80s. And then it moves forward into the 80s, but it's not the predictable. I think they do a really good job of purposely styling it as not what you stereotypically think. Mm-hmm. And Carrie Russell just doesn't look good on her, right? So
All right, guys. Well, this was fun.
Really fun. We should mention that this is coming out on the Sunday in between a part one and a part two episode. The part one is getting a lot. We're getting a lot of feedback about it. It's called Helping versus Helicoptering, or Helicoptering versus Helping. I already forget. Just about helping our kids become more independent and kind of putting ourselves in check when it comes to being over-involved, but also how that's harder than it sounds and maybe not as cut and dried as it sounds. So if you are listening to this when it comes out, I would really encourage you to listen to last Tuesday's show if you missed it, and then look for that one on Tuesday, because I don't know, I feel pretty proud of it. I think it's an important conversation.
Me too, it was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, everything we talked about, including possibly pictures of us at prom. I don't know, what else can we dig up? All of that is always at themomhour.com. Just look for the show notes for this episode. All right.
Talk to you soon, guys.